Welcome to Cider Chat. It's part four of the Building a Cidery series, and we're going to be finding out from this week's maker how he utilizes his space at the cidery and three key fundamentals of the design.
Going up.
Hello, my name is Rhea Windcaller, and I am the producer and cider MC of this weekly podcast, where we speak with makers, cider enthusiasts, and folks within the cider trade from around the world. I'm very excited to share with you my conversation with Steve Garwood of Ragged Hill Cidery and Orchard. He's based in Massachusetts, my home state, and makes some outstanding ciders that never disappoint. We're going to be getting to his conversation coming straight up, but first, a wee bit of news out and about in Ciderville. Third annual New York International Cider Competition takes place February 21st, 2021. And the judges are trade buyers, meaning they are the bartenders. They are the people who look at your commercial cider and say, should I put that on the shelf? Which I think is a pretty valuable asset. So get your ciders in, and you have limited time, and this is my last reminder to you. Go to NYICiderCompetition.com. The 11th annual CiderCon is taking place this week, February 3rd through the 5th. And this is the annual trade conference put on by the American Cider Association. And you so know that I'm going to be there. I can't wait for the opening remarks. It's going to be about 11:30 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. And if you're on the West Coast, well, you are around 8:30 a.m. I'll be drinking cider. Will you? I just love hearing opening remarks. And then it's going to go into consumer trends for 2021, what you need to know to stay agile. And, you know, I don't know, maybe they're going to be doing yoga stretches. No. They're talking about being agile in the market. And there's just a bevy of workshops going all the way through on Friday. Right after that opening remark, they have a virtual trade show, and you can find some of our sponsors there, such as the New York International Cider Competition and Fermentis, who we've been featuring a Q&A each week with Kevin. So beyond that, I don't know what else I have to do to convince you to say, hey, register for this amazing virtual landscape of makers and workshops and sessions that are, you know, going to kind of blow the stack off the building in the best way possible. I got a little inside tip that there are a lot of people registered for that. So they've already exceeded their goal, which means that I think there's going to be an opportunity to like hang out with people online, kind of like a speed dating thing where they'll kind of pop you in for a little conversation. And despite the fact that you might be shy, kind of like me, believe it or not, who cares? I can't wait to see who I get hooked up with for that speed dating, because it's been a while since I've done that, and it was kind of fun back in the day. So I'll see you there, you know? We'll talk about what we have in our glass. So make sure your glasses are ready. Maybe comb your hair. Set up your lighting and get hooked into CiderCon 2021. And I certainly hope to see you at the Fermenting with Quince panel that I will be moderating on Friday afternoon. Let's see, we have Art and Science, we have Kim Hamlin and Dan Rinke, we have Steve Seelan from South Hill Cider, James Forbes from Little Pomona, and Martin Berkeley of Pilton Cider. Jeez, we're going to go from the UK all the way to the Pacific Northwest and talk Quince with some outstanding makers. So I hope to see you then. Either way you shake it, it's CiderCon 2021, and that always means a good time. Find out more at ciderassociation.org. It's time now to grab a glass and head to our featured conversation with Steve Garwood of Ragged Hill Cidery and Orchard, based in West Brookfield, Massachusetts. Ragged Hill launched commercially with their ciders in 2017, but Steve has been making cider for quite a long time. And he and his daughter, Anne, work with orchardist Keith Arsenault, who began planting the orchard back in 1984. There's over 40 varieties of apples, and there's a link in the show notes to the New England Apple Association page for Ragged Hill, where you can see a complete list of the apples currently used on site. I do consider this an orchard-based cidery, which is one of the reasons I have them in this series for you today. In last week's episode, part 3, we heard from the folks at Courthouse Creek Cidery. They work only with oak barrels, whereas Ragged Hill does have stainless steel and barrels and also works with culture yeast. So if you get my feel, that's how we're going, kind of revving it up in this Building a Cidery series. And I knew that Steve would have a wealth of tips on building out his cidery and working with the dimensions of the current building that they are in. We'll begin with hearing from Steve on how much prep and forethought he put into building Ragged Hill.
A long time. I'd say around 2010, I knew that I was aiming for a commercial hard cider making operation. We started off just making sweet cider at the orchard, and a lot of the equipment is the same, certainly. Yeah, you know, the equipment we needed to move around apples, to handle the apples at a scale, even to sell, say, 400 or 500 gallons of sweet cider a year, which is what we do at the orchard. It gave me a chance to figure that out, how to handle half-ton bins of apples, how to press a few hundred gallons at a time, how to think about storing it. So that's really how I got started thinking about how to do it at scale. I certainly made hard cider for years, and we made hard cider just for ourselves and scaled that up as we scaled the sweet cider operation.
And when Steve's talking about sweet cider, he is using that. That's what we call cider around here, but it's really fresh pressed apple juice. So I'm wondering,
yes.
Just to clarify that for everybody, it gets a little confusing, the nomenclature. Are you using the same press that you used initially for that fresh pressed apple juice?
We use bladder presses.
Right.
So when we first started, we just had one, and we had one of the smallest size. So now we have two, and the next step would be to go to something totally different rather than just add more water presses. But the water presses don't provide as much pressure as some of the other presses, and so the apples usually have to stay in the press for at least 45 minutes to an hour per press load. So we alternate back and forth between the two presses. One press can be pressing while we're loading the other press, setting it up. Then we go back, empty the first press, load it again. So we can bounce back and forth between these two presses. And that makes it fairly efficient.
Well, can I ask, why do you have to wait about 45 minutes before you, is it the filling up of the bladder inside? And just to be clear, to describe this is like a barrel, a round cylindrical barrel. It's typically stainless steel with lots of holes on the outside. And inside is a plastic, not plastic, but rubber bladder that is filled with water, like a garden hose. Is that what you're waiting for, is for it to fill up? What's the wait time?
It fills up fairly quickly in a few minutes, but it takes time for the juice to come out. We only press sweet cider or apple juice during the harvest season, but for our hard cider, we wait until actually right about now. We're talking in the first week of December. Mm-hmm. Now is when we start pressing for hard cider, and we may be pressing until March. So the March apples are still very good, but they're soft. Mm-hmm. And the softer apples, it seems counterintuitive, but the softer apples give up their juice more slowly.
How much does the grinder that you use for your apples before they go into the press factor in here?
It's an elevator slash grinder. It lifts the apples up from the washer, actually. It lifts them up to get them high enough that they can be ground up and then drop into the press through the top. So this is an Owesco grinder. I've noticed a lot of people use this type of grinder. It's manufactured right down the road from us in Hatfield, Massachusetts. And it's a fairly simple sort of thing, but pretty powerful. Has a rotating drum with carbide teeth in it, and the elevator drops the apples in the top. They come spewing out the bottom into the press. Makes a huge mess. It's hard to keep this contained. Sort of a mist of apples and apple juice emanates from this while it's operating. It gets all over everything.
Is that a design issue that you think could be remedied somehow? Because I have seen many elevator, grinder setups. What do you think could be done differently there?
I've seen some European machines that seem to be much better contained. But I've seen videos of people operating these apple grinding and pressing lines in just street clothes, not messy old barn clothes, which is what I have to wear because I get covered in applesauce, basically, when I'm operating this. It is enclosed, but so the head rotates very fast. It generates a lot of force on applesauce that we're producing, and it comes out of every single little opening in the grinder. So it takes some doing to figure out how to get it all going where you want it, which is in the press.
I think that's an important factor to key into, because when you're setting up a cidery, certainly at a commercial level, the room that you do that in is so important. And I'd like to move there next into your actual, it's kind of like a shed roof ceiling. And it's really long. But can you talk about that initial room? You have been building out the tasting room and whatnot, but you were really working with what you had. Is that true? And then moving forward from there?
Yes. So when we started pressing apples, which was around 2010, we did it outside. We did it outside on a concrete pad that we had that was right outside of our apple storage area, and so we did that for a couple of years. And first thing, of course, we realized is that we needed an indoor space. Back when it was outside, we could only press from September through December, maybe if it was decent weather in December, because it starts getting cold. And you're out there pressing apples and everything's turning into ice. It's dangerous and difficult and miserable. So we realized that we needed a building. We built the building in fall of 2017, just as we were ramping up the hard cider business. So it's long and narrow. That's just how it ended up. That's just the room that we had to do it. And I knew from the beginning that I was going to break it up into three areas, more or less, the three big things that we have to do. One is the apple grinding and pressing, which makes a huge mess and has to be separated somewhat from the other areas. Mm-hmm. Then we have the fermentation area, where it's just all tanks. Then we have the bottling area, which houses our bottling and labeling line, a small laboratory area, and then the tasting room.
I'm counting five different areas in that.
I'm so sorry. I knew that the production area had to be separated. I had to have those three separations, mm-hmm. Between apple processing, fermentation and bottling. The big problem that we have now is that I really didn't think about how much room it was going to take to store our finished bottled ciders. And I just didn't really think about it. I couldn't visualize it. And now we're finding we need a lot of space to store ciders. I guess I had thought that we'd just sort of make it and sell it. And I wouldn't make it too far ahead. But now we're finding, since the business is growing, that we have to have a lot of cider on hand to sell. And even though it sells quickly, we still have to have a place to store it. So that's what we're wrestling with right now. During the pandemic, since we can't open the tasting room, we're actually using the tasting room area as our finished cider storage area. Obviously, that's not a permanent solution.
Now looking to the future, what would be the ideal storage size for you if you could, you know, do that? I know that's not always possible, but what are you looking at?
We need to be able to move pallets of bottled cider around with a forklift. And we really need to be able to stack pallets of bottled cider on pallet racking. They can't sit right on top of each other. Our ideal storage building is probably at least 40 feet wide, 60 feet deep, by 15 feet high, 15 feet of clearance, and no posts or anything in that area, so we can move around freely in the area. But yeah, we need quite a bit of storage. We really, even though if you come to our orchard, it looks like there's a lot of room, we really don't have a good site at the orchard for storage. So we may have to rent or build something off-site just for our bottled storage.
Right. You're dedicating the property there primarily to the apple trees, which seems right. And you're situated in, if you drive up to Ragged Hill, it's a beautiful drive up this long driveway with the trees on your right going in. And then you come up to just a beautiful barn set up, and there's like a farm stand in one area. And then there's like the tasting room and the Ragged Hill operations there. But you also have one other section, which is the apple storage, because you're storing apples on site up into March for your pressing. How big is that room, and is that sustainable where it's at right now, or are you kind of scratching your head saying we have to expand there too?
We've already outgrown all of our space. Even the apple storage, we send apples off-site to other orchards in the area who have room, or when they have room, we actually send apples off-site. So our storage area is 20, it's also long and narrow. It's 20 feet wide by 75 feet long. And we can store a lot of apples in there, probably close to 20,000 bushels of apples.
What's the height in that room, Steve?
12 feet high. So we can stack half-ton bins 4 high in that room. And right now, it's solid bins. Mm-hmm. You can't get from one end of the room to the other. You can only, fortunately, we have entrances on both ends of the room, so we can pack it absolutely solid and still be able to get in and take bins out.
Are you setting up a map for yourself as you're putting apples in, you know, during the harvest? How do you manage where you know where the apples are so that you could say, okay, I want to do a blend of these apples for this particular cider?
It's hard. We try to figure it out. We're working on it, but it's funny you should mention that, because just yesterday we were pulling apples out. Today we're even as we speak, we're pressing apples for hard cider, Roxbury russets, golden russets, Dabinets, and Wixons. You know, when you took a trip with your parents in the car and they gave you a little puzzle of the United States with parts that you had to move around and figure out how to get the states all lined up. Right. Anyway, that's what it's like. It's like a three-dimensional puzzle, and we have to sometimes pull a lot of bins out to get to the bins we want to get to. And no, we don't have a map. We just try to remember where stuff is. And the bins have labels on them. But if the bins, you can't see the bins behind other bins. So there are sections that are certain apples. And the russet apples are in this section. The Baldwins are in this section. The Cortlands are in this section. The Macs are in this section. And we try to put all the bins together.
This is another factor, too, to consider, I think, in building a cidery at this level commercially is you got to learn how to drive a forklift. How did that go for you?
Absolutely. Well, we still make mistakes. Just the other day, we shattered one of our wooden bins with a tractor that has a forklift on it because... actually, I wasn't driving it. Keith was driving it, who's the most experienced tractor and forklift driver we have. And he thought that the tractor was in forward gear, but it was in reverse gear, and he smashed a whole bin, empty. Uh-huh. Fortunately, the bin was empty, but it made matchsticks out of it. It was, but that it happens. Yes, you have to be very careful. And especially since our room is so constrained. But so we have a regular forklift, what you would visualize as a as an industrial forklift. And then we also have a tractor because we have to run the bins out to into the orchard.
It's farming, right? It's two levels. You've got the orchard care and the tractors going out there. I know you're also solar. How many acres of apples do you have, and is there plans to expand on that?
There's 15 acres of apples altogether. It's actually always changing. We may change varieties. Varieties go in and out of fashion. We took out a whole row of golden delicious trees, big ones that produced a lot of apples. Nobody buys Golden Delicious anymore. It was something that came in and out of fashion. Mm. And we don't even harvest we have a couple of remaining Golden Delicious trees. They're sitting right outside of the cidery because they look great. They're big, what you think of, they look like apple trees.
You've changed from standard trees to dwarf. Are you doing trellising? And this is all based upon just increasing your yield of apples.
Yes, it's increased yield. Dwarf trees will produce the maximum output per acre that's possible with any given variety. It's also a labor issue. The big trees, big full-size trees that you have to get up on ladders to harvest are difficult. Takes a lot of labor to harvest, and the labor just isn't available anymore. So dwarf trees we can harvest from still standing on the ground. You can actually reach the tops of the trees, maximum 10 feet high. They are on a trellis. These trees won't stand up by themselves, just, you know, standing up alone. So you do have to put them on a trellis. The initial expense for planting dwarf trees is much more than planting standard sized trees because of the trellising. It's quite a bit of work to build a proper trellis and materials, but the trees come into bearing much more quickly. Some varieties you can get a harvest in the third year after planting these trees, whereas standard trees are 8 to 10 years to get a full harvest from. They're easier to prune, something that many people wouldn't realize is that orchards require a lot of pruning, and the full-size trees are difficult to prune. Again, you have to get up on ladders with chainsaws to prune them, or chainsaws on poles, and the pruning decisions are difficult, whereas the dwarf trees, you can just walk by, snip a couple of branches off, and go to the next one. Mm-hmm. So it's a lot less labor intensive, and I don't see any difference. Some people say that they think that the full-size trees produce fruit that tastes a little different or makes better cider. I don't think that the difference between a full-size tree and a dwarf tree, if there are any qualitative differences, they're certainly outweighed by any differences in the particular soils and microclimate that you grow them in. So I don't see a big issue there.
Let's talk a little bit about your soil that you have there, because that's a really important factor for your orchard.
Yes, the soil is important. It's up on a hilltop. It's this glacial till soil. It's decomposed granite. It drains very well. Apples don't like to have wet roots. We actually have another orchard on the other side of town that's all cider varieties planted in 2014. And it's planted on very sandy ground. There's no rocks in this ground. It's not glacial till. It's a sandbank. And it's easy to work, that I'll have to say. But the sandy soil, just complete sand, has given us some other problems that you wouldn't imagine until you get into it. But the sandy soil, the voles really like that sandy soil because they can dig easily in it. So we constantly have a vole problem in this orchard. And we also have a problem seasonally with these bugs that are called rose chafers. They're like little Japanese beetles, yeah. But they also like the sandy soil. And, so I would say compared to the total sand soil, the soil we have up on the hilltop at Ragged Hill is better because the voles don't like it. There's too many rocks for them to dig through. And the bugs don't like it. Again, they just can't dig through it as easily. So,
Ragged Hill Cidery and Orchard has 40 different varieties of apples to work with. But there's one particular apple that might surprise makers, as it is a well-known culinary apple and not necessarily what one typically thinks as a choice cider-making apple. Let's find out next what apple that is and how Steve is making it into yet another exquisite cider.
I have experimented and figured out how to make a nice cider with Honeycrisp. I only make a certain amount of it, and it sells out in weeks. We make it in September, and it's usually all sold out by the end of September.
I know a lot of ears just kind of perked up to that. Folks who have that same apple, probably in abundance, like yourself. Any tips on working with Honeycrisp as in terms of fermenting it? And are you fermenting that dry?
Well, we make ice cider, mm-hmm. as you know. Mm-hmm. So we freeze a lot of juice in the winter time. We press juice, we put it outside. The water freezes off. It's sweet and acidic. It concentrates the acids also. We freeze some Honeycrisp. I blend in that amplified juice before I ferment it. That's how we add some character to the Honeycrisp. If you just fermented plain Honeycrisp juice, it's just kind of neutral. It doesn't have much character to it. So we've figured out how to use our ice juice and how to use our New England cold weather as a resource to amplify the Honeycrisp character.
Wonderful. I mean, that's kind of classic, using the culinary apple varieties in an ice cider, and you make a mighty fine ice cider, no doubt about it.
Thank you. Another variety that I like a lot that you can taste in our Pomme d'Or. But it's not particularly thought of as a cider variety, is Gold Rush. So we have a few Gold Rush trees. We have maybe 50 Gold Rush trees. So that's not very many on the scale of what we grow. And it's difficult as a fresh apple because it matures very late. In fact, this year, our Gold Rush didn't even ripen completely before we started having hard frost. But so it's a very late apple, but it makes really good cider, and it's very sweet. So you have to leave it on the tree and just as long as you can until the day before you know you're going to get a hard freeze and harvest them there. So it's difficult on a commercial scale, but makes great cider. We blend it with Jonna Gold and Golden Delicious. And so we have our Pomme d'Or, our golden apple blend. But I'm very happy. Very happy with it. It's a subtle flavor. We use oak to finish it off, and very nice. Anyway, I think that's part of our challenge as cider makers everywhere in America. We have the freedom to explore different ways of making cider and different varieties, and Our challenge is to find the best ways of making cider and focus in on those styles and those varieties. And I'm talking about making cider that's more like making wine, where you have your different grape varieties, and winemakers are focused on bringing out the characters of those varieties, even when they're blended. You know, many of the very best wines are blended varieties, but still, you're concentrating on the character of that blend of varieties. And apart from making coffee stout flavored cider, I think our challenge is to find what are the very best ciders we can make. What are the best varieties we can use? And I don't think that the coffee stout cider is going to have a really long-term lasting stylistic impact. There'll always be these experimental things that like the beer makers do, but there are certain tried and true styles that are worth exploring and amplifying and striving to do the very best we can with those.
Absolutely. And I would say that your ciders really dance on the tongue. And the Pomme d'Or we had at home here for Thanksgiving, and it just knocked our socks off. Thank you for the quality cider that you're producing, and also for taking the time today to be here and share your wisdom and knowledge base with Cider Chat.
My pleasure, Rhea, and it's always great to talk to you. I look forward to every conversation that we have.
Thank you. Always a great time hanging out with Steve Garwood of Ragged Hill Cider in West Brookfield, Massachusetts. Definitely check out the show notes and links in this here episode to find out more. This is, again, episode 258.
Walking through the orchards.
A big tip of the glass to Izzy, who is at Barleywood Orchard in Bristol in the UK, for becoming a patron of Cider Chat. Izzy also is kind of like the prime minister of the Cider Women right now, and that's a group of UK women who are really championing cider in their country. I happened to meet her at the first meeting of Cider Women back in 2018 when I was hanging out with Susanna Forbes and all the cool people at Ross on Wye Cider and the festival. Oh my God, such good times. We're going to get there again, Ciderville. You know, if you want to go on a Totally Cider tour, we are heading back in that region. So keep that in your pocket, your close pocket to your chest right now, because that's my plans. Anyways, I got to meet Izzy. Just you meet somebody, you can just tell they have like good energy. Well, that is exactly who Izzy is. So thanks again to those folks there. Check out their website, barleywoodorchard.co.uk. And also to Elizabeth Ryan of Hudson Valley Farmhouse and Cider. That's a New York cidery in the Hudson Valley. Elizabeth Ryan is just a powerhouse of a person. She just beams beauty. I mean, everybody in Ciderville does, right? So I look forward to hunting her down one of these days. She's been on the docket for Cider Chat for a while, and it'll happen. Also, Lee Reeve, Insider Japan. Big tip of the glass to him. He's going to be at CiderCon this week, talking about the scene in Japan and just doing cool stuff because that's what Lee does, including writing a bi-monthly Japanese and English magazine all on cider. And we're collaborating together. He's actually putting Cider Chat in Insider News. Definitely subscribe to Insider Japan and get that bi-monthly magazine. It's so worth it. And then also a tip of the glass to Colleen O'Sullivan and Jake Mann of A Duck Chicken Cider. They are in South London. They make cider like a nano cidery in their flat and make damn good cider. They're just like, they crack me up. I love them. Duck Chicken Cider. They have fun swag and make good cider. Did I say that once? I'll say it twice. And when the world opens up, you'll be able to find it in the best bars in London. Yeah! And I mentioned them before, Ross on Wye Cider and Perry Company, but I got to mention them again and again because the Johnsons have been supporters of Cider Chat for quite a while right now. That is Albert Johnson. Wow. Thank you so much, Albert. As always, you are just one of those people that I just feel so honored to know, and what your family is doing there, the quality of cider that you make and what you put out into the world speaks volumes of your character, and that character cannot do anything but also pour into your cider. So it's a crystallized win. I love you. And also we have the folks at Spacetime Mead and Cider Work in Scranton, Pennsylvania, or outside of Scranton, Pennsylvania. Check out their website. There's links at the Cider Going Up campaign at ciderchat.com. They are also supporters of Cider Chat at the commercial level in the Cider Going Up campaign, which you too can join too. If you're in the industry, you're always welcome to join in. Every little bit helps. Shoot, we're starting to roll out some videos here on Cider Chat. And luckily, one of the patrons of Cider Chat, his name is Robert, is doing some video work for me, making it easier for me to get some of this stuff out because there's a lot of editing involved. And one of the first things that Robert did was do a bit of a design, a syncing of an amazing presentation by Dr. Cameron Peace on Apple DNA and identification. I'm going to be rolling out that to the patrons of Cider Chat, just the bare minimum, and then it'll be going up on YouTube for all. But if you want to see this early on, definitely become a patron because it's going to be going up in like the next week. And one more tip of the glass before we roll out, and that is to Esso Terra Ciderworks, based in Dolores, Colorado. Now, Dolores is in the Four Corners region of Colorado. So you have Colorado, Utah, Arizona, and New Mexico, and it is beautiful desert country. And in that same region, there are these forgotten apple trees. They're calling them feral apple trees, right, that are just growing and have complexity, and it sounds like they're doing some amazing stuff. And Jared and Elizabeth, I want to say, you know, that is one region of the U.S. that I am just dying to get out to. It's been on my sights for quite a while because I have to see some family out in Colorado. I just need it for my soul. And to imagine sitting there with a glass of Esso Terra, looking out on the desert landscape just makes me smile on this very, very snowy day in New England. So thank you for being part of the Cider Going Up campaign. That's it for now, Ciderville. I'm going to get myself ready for CiderCon because it's happening, well, today, the day this podcast goes live. But if you're out there in the future, well, there's always something pulling me away and pulling me back to you. And it's always the best part of my day, being able to chat via this medium with all of you. And I leave you here. This is Rhea Windcaller signing off for now. Looking forward to seeing you in Ciderville.
cider. We like ponds. We love orchards. And having fun, there is a reason.
There is a reason why we do it like this.
Oh yes, there is.
There is a reason why we do it like this.
Oh yes, there is.
There is a reason why we drink it like this.
Oh yes, there is a reason. We like walking through the orchards, dancing in the streets, smelling all the blossoms, kicking up our feet. We like cider. We like ponds. We like orchards. Having some fun.
There is a reason.
There is a reason why we do it like this. Oh yes, there is.
There is a reason why we do it like this.
Oh yes, there is.
There is a reason why we drink it like this.
Oh yes, there is.
There is a reason.
We like walking through the orchards, dancing in the streets, smelling all the blossoms, kicking up our feet.
Oh yeah.
We like cider.
Oh yes, we do.
We like palms.
Oh yes, we do.
We love orchards.
Having some fun.
There is a reason. There is a reason why we do it like this.
Ba-da-da-dum.
There is a reason why we do it like this.
Ba-da-da-dum.
There is a reason why we drink it like this.
Ba-da-da-dum. Ba-da-da-dum.
We like walking down the orchards, dancing in the streets, smelling all the blossoms, kicking up our feet.
Oh yeah.
We like cider. We like palms.
Oh yes, we do.
We like orchards. Having some fun.
Yeehaw!